I'd like to open by saying that it's now 10:40 and our 6-year-old has only just gone to sleep.
Yep.
I took her to a party. She bounced on a bouncy castle for literally 90 minutes. She was puce and all the mums were going, she'll sleep tonight. No, she f-ing won't.
I don't know why that's still a thing people say.
No, she won't sleep tonight.
We used to dog sit your aunt's collie.
Yeah.
And you could tire the dog out. You could.
Yeah.
For a minute.
Yeah.
And then be back up again.
I mean, you compared our daughter to a dog there.
Yeah. It stands.
You stand by it. A puppy. It was a puppy, to be fair. It was a cute dog.
Look, we are very, very late with this episode. But then again,
time has no meaning. Time is a construct.
You, person listening, might be listening to this many months hence, and so you don't care. And no. So that's what we're trying to channel with us not caring either.
10:40.
Well, late recording in the day, but also very late.
That's
chronologically
just all I care about.
For this episode. So remember, there will be spoilers. Not many, because we haven't really paid attention to the episode coming up, which is episode 8 of season 2 of Picard, Star Trek Picard. So if you don't want spoilers, please leave us now and come back later. There will also be talk that is not Star Trek related. So if you'd like that instead, you should jump to this point, as ably given to you by our dear friend Siri.
Just before 25 minutes in.
Siri, at about 25 past 10, I thought she's down. And then she woke up and just started telling me the plot of David Bowie's Labyrinth.
Siri doesn't care.
Siri should care. She overrode you, Siri. I turned the lights off with Siri. She turned them back on. Ridiculous.
There's something very, very Star Trek computer-like about Siri, isn't there?
I'm just furious.
That's fair. I thought I'd start, if I may, with a quote from... So I was basically... We live in a bubble, which isn't to say a kind of, you know, media bubble, but it's just a bubble where we don't actually talk to anybody or...
I talk to people.
Engage with any media.
On the internet.
But I was like, what does the world think of this season of Star Trek Picard?
Oh, yeah.
And so I jumped onto Den of Geek. And the opening line from their writer, Lacey, says at this point... This is for this episode. At this point, it seems that we all just need to admit that the pacing of Star Trek Picard Season 2 is a problem.
Well, compared to Season 1, it's rapid.
But actually, Lacey then goes on to say that actually there's a worry. We've only got 2 episodes left of this series.
Yeah, and what's going on?
We keep starting sort of subplots.
New threads.
And then kind of leaving them there.
Yeah.
And whether they're all going to be sort of tied up neatly or not, who knows?
So I didn't even bother watching the episode that we missed last episode that Gordon and Jenny so nicely summarized.
Which was the episode that had his father as a monster? That was the previous one.
Yeah,
that was
I didn't watch it, so yeah.
So that actually, to me, was a worthwhile use of a block. So it was a complete lacunae. It was nothing to do with the major plot, except as drives Jean-Luc Picard, I guess. But it was just about the fact that there's a monster chasing him and it's his father. And actually, I think that's a, you know, eminently useful trauma to address in popular fiction.
I didn't watch it, but I can imagine that being a whole episode of The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Like a standalone episode. I think, yeah, it's really struggling with like a lot of sort of plot points. But that's, in a way, that's criticism, because I just thought, I can't bother watching that episode. And I feel I missed nothing.
Yes, it did feel quite self-contained, I guess.
I just picked it up, you know, picked it up again and didn't feel I'd missed anything at all.
Yes.
Alison Pill still walking around in a red dress.
Yes.
And then the only thing that I don't understand is why is that doctor lady and her son on the La Serena now? How did they get there?
I'm presuming that Rios brought them aboard for some reason.
You watched it.
The good thing is that I assume that people listening to our podcast either are super fans,
yeah,
who are coming to us for some light relief and who therefore have paid attention to the plot,
yeah,
or they're people who, like us, are the Star Trek ambivalent and don't care too much about the plot. So I give ourselves a pass at being able to do specific recaps.
They were too relaxed. Like, she was all like, oh, when I'm gone, like, is she going to wipe her mind? Oh, God, I don't know. I need to really read these on Wikipedia. But I swear to God, we let her bounce in a bouncy castle. I wouldn't mind if she then slept in the next morning, but she still gets up at like 7:30.
I know.
Why does she not need more sleep?
We need more sleep.
Oh my god.
There's definitely something about Jurati that's a little bit like, you know, when you see a school production, and this is not a criticism of school productions, I've been in many.
And they do as you can imagine. Out of the two of us would you imagine has starred in a school production?
I suspect you've done more school productions than I have, yeah. In the sense that when you were in the orchestra, you would have performed more often than I would.
I've been in school productions as like a shadowy background member, like making them tick along. You'd have been like full spotlight.
But like, there's something about when the staging is a little haphazard and a character just has to sort of vamp by, like, you know, I don't know, marching up and down, yeah, in the wings or something. Jurati's kind of doing that. She's just kind of stomping around the urban landscape.
Yeah.
In this case, ripping batteries out of cars, doing her thing.
I really wanted her to have done some really rubbish, what do you call it when they turn people into Borgs?
Assimilation.
Assimilation, yeah. I wanted that guy to have like an iPhone stuck in his face or something.
Again, and I'm not even going to apologise, but I can't remember if there was this episode that we're technically talking about, the one we missed. Was the one we watched, the one that had the sort of Mulder and Scully style secret agent? Was that the one you missed?
Yeah, oh, I liked him. That was really good.
It was good. But it felt quite pastiche to me. Like, it felt quite...
I really liked it, and I liked that they weren't going to let him suffer. He was just like, I've worked my whole life. Yeah. And they were just denying everything until he was like, yeah, oh yeah, the jig is up. You're absolutely right. Aliens are everywhere. Yeah. And we need your help. Fanboy, viewer, proxy...
Very much so. What do you think about that?
Because it's great, though. I actually really enjoyed it.
A bunch of our guests have talked about that with this series, that it very much is a series in service of the fans, which we're not particularly, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a successful series because of that, or could it have been broader?
I think in a way I enjoy it as a character piece more than anything else. So even though I skipped that Picard episode, that sounded great. And I am a sucker. I don't know if it's my gender or my age, but I actually in many ways prefer that those personal interactions and the broad sweeping arc of things. I don't really care what the Borg Queen's going to do. I know that everyone's going to be fine in the end.
Yes.
So I don't really care. And I don't really care about Corey or Dr. Bartholomew Soong. But yeah, I do like the character stuff, and I thought he was a really extremely enjoyable character. I loved him.
I mean, it's a hell of a CV piece, right? It's a really nice little role.
It's
meaty enough that you could do some fun stuff with
Vulcans
it.
And Vulcan mind meld hadn't worked.
Am I not right in thinking that shows that there was technically first contact before first contact?
Yeah, that was 20. Well, they're in 2024. And it's when that little boy was little, when that man was little, which would take him to like the 80s, maybe. So I don't know. I can't remember when first contact was meant to be. So
I wonder if they're fucking with the canon there, allowing a first contact.
I have kind of lost touch with the timelines. I must say, I'm finding our podcast, as you may survive because it's been like this episode's now incredibly late. Like I'm finding it quite hard to talk about because it's very entertaining, but also very forgettable.
Yeah.
It's just like, I enjoy it while I'm watching it. But then I just switch off the telly and think, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, that might...
it's more enjoyable. The first series had elements of ridiculousness that I could laugh about. But now I'm just like, no, whatever. This is fine. I enjoy watching it.
That might be just our old brains going, Jenny.
It might be because our six-year-old...
I mean, it's now...
Didn't go to sleep.
10 to 11.
Till 20 to 11.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow she'll just bounce out of bed and be like, can I have some Cheerios? Like, if I jumped up and down in a bouncy castle for 90 minutes, you'd have to call an ambulance. You'd have to put me in a coma to let me recover.
Yeah.
But she just like stepped off, ate a hot dog, carried on with her life.
Yep.
She wanted to have a vote after David Bowie. She wanted to have a vote on what film would go with, like what double bill we should have. If we watch Labyrinth, what else should we watch? And she decided on Encanto. She voted with herself.
She was unanimous.
I pretended to be asleep.
you definitely give in to her too much at bedtime. I'm just like, go to sleep.
I just didn't say anything. I was just like
you're a soft touch.
You know, in the Tom Hanks film Castaway, when he's got the baseball with a handprint, and that's his friend Wilson. I'm like that for her at bedtime.
Yeah,
I completely ignore her. But she still finds me a comforting conversationalist.
She can sort of run your conversation.
Well, she also knows how to goad me. So during the David Bowie waking time, she was like, "You remind me of the babe. Then what is it, mummy?" And of course
you're, it's like shaving a haircut two bits. It's like in Roger Rabbit where he does and you're bursting out from behind the laughing plaster, like, oh, shouting God, two bits.
Can't, yeah. It's what, babe? Go to sleep.
Well, look, we might be slightly, well, exhausted and
tired. Who the hell is listening to this at this point? Else.
Who knows? God bless you if you are.
But you weird completist. You don't have to listen to every episode of every podcast. You don't have to eat all the pasta in the pan. You can just stop when you've had enough.
I mean, that's not what you say to Ada. I've invited somebody who's gone full misanthrope for this episode as our guest spot. Colleague of mine, Ian McDonald, who now works for the government, which makes him sound far sexier and more interesting than he actually is.
Wow.
But who I worked with as the host of one of our podcasts, Reading Between the Lines. And when I asked him to do this, he was like, "I don't want to do that because I think it's all shit." And I was like, "That's why we want you to do it, Ian."
Oh no, but I don't want to feel bad I don't want the genuine Picard fans to feel bad. Is he going to make us feel bad?
I don't think so. I think you will, at the very least, recognize some truths in what he's saying.
Oh dear, okay.
But I think it's, alongside people being very excited about the series, I think it's quite good to have somebody who... we asked somebody else as well who was just so disgusted by it all that he wouldn't even... record an I'm disgusted with it all segment.
Oh no, well, I would like to say, I'm going to preemptively say that I am enjoying Picard for the most part. It's not Picard's fault my child doesn't go to sleep till the fucking early hours.
Okay, here is Ian McDonald with his take on, not particularly on episode 8 of season 2 of High Picard, but just generally.
I don't think he's watched that.
On Picard.
Okay.
Top 5 favourite Star Trek movies in order are The Undiscovered Country, The Wrath of Khan, The Voyage Home, First Contact, and Generations. Now that I've established my credentials, a disclaimer, I have only watched 3 episodes of Picard Season 2, and an explanation, I've only watched 3 episodes of Picard Season 2 because it's shit. I don't really want to be that guy, but I feel like I have to be. I listened to the Dave Bradley episode of this podcast recently, which was great, and you guys were all so cheerful about episode 1 and optimistic about how the series might turn out that I couldn't help but wonder whether you'd stumbled upon an alternative show named Picard, which was somehow all the things that this show should have been, like the Next Generation episode Tapestry, but in reverse, which is a bit meta. Tapestry is probably where I'll start. You guys have talked about it already. It's just one example of original Trek doing in 45 minutes what Picard takes 10 hours to do. And doing it better. Other examples include Next Generation's Yesterday's Enterprise, which you've mentioned before as well, which deals with similar themes about legacy and one's position in history without feeling the need to stare right into camera every 5 minutes and yell, "Eventually every one of us will die." There's also the original series episode Mirror Mirror, which sets up an alternative universe ruled by a much less enlightened Federation, suspiciously like the one that we've got right here, and in which Spock has been allowed to grow a beard for some nefarious reason. Several episodes of Deep Space Nine and Enterprise wound up revisiting this universe over the years, rehashing some of its dramatic points with varying degrees of success. But what's one more trip to the well, eh? Because ultimately that's what this show is. It's another trip to the well. Why? Well, it's neither interesting nor original, nor is it really Star Trek in anything but name. And why would the producers make the effort to do anything interesting or original when it might not be immediately popular enough to make them any money? Much better to grab an existing active fan base by the heartstrings and hope they'll break out the credit card and buy whatever stagnant, swampy muck you can pump out, provided it's packaged right. And boy, are they desperate to package it right. Remember all the good times they squeal at us relentlessly like a pig in its favourite pile of shit? Remember the Borg? And Hugh? Remember Hugh? What about the Stargazer? What about Guinan and Q and Riker and Troy and Data and the comically endless number of related people Brent Spiner can play? They're all here, and they're all doing stuff, I guess. So remember to like and subscribe. Although I guess in a way it makes sense to pack a new show full of old characters when you're going to make your new characters so uniformly unappealing. Or unappealingly uniform. Seriously, what sets these characters apart from one another exactly? They're all identically snarky and probably unprofessional children who abandon reason, sanity, procedure, and bladder control as soon as they're presented with the merest inconvenience. Not a solitary one of them appears adjusted enough to even be a semi-functional person, and you know that's the case because they're constantly telling you, over and over again, that they've had a hard paper round and they're desperately triggered by everything that's going on around them. All except Picard himself, bizarrely. The one who actually has a long and storied history of trauma relating to the Borg has better things to do than confront all that shit again. Like getting old, which he seems to be doing at an alarming pace. But anyway, the Borg aren't really worth worrying about anymore, are they? At least that's the only conclusion I can draw from the utterly melon-twisting decision to take the assimilation process, one of the most sinister and disturbing acts of violence in the Star Trek universe, and turn it into a glorified fucking mind-mapping exercise. That decision, in Episode 3, to make one of science fiction's greatest antagonists just about as frightening as your average corporate away day was when I decided to switch off. But God, I wish I'd done it sooner. Because Season 1 was shit as well.
I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, go big or go home.
I feel bad now.
For the producers, for our listeners.
Our listeners. Listeners, it's okay. This is still a safe space.
You can still like Star Trek.
We're like, this is an episode of Newsnight. We've had to have someone on who has wildly opposing views to our listeners.
Yeah, Ian's actually a 30-year-old woman called Samantha. We've just adjusted her voice to keep her protected.
Well, that did make me laugh. Thank you very much, Ian.
In fairness, I mean, he did go full. I think he was quite enjoying himself, but there were, you know.
I glorified my mapping exercise.
It's a fair point. I think, yeah, I mean, like, I guess the whole reason for doing Star Trek Picard, right, is because Picard, and I'm not entirely sure we've seen much of him and his backstory particularly.
I think it's interesting that if you remember, I think it's, is it the episode with Hugh? Mm. He won't even meet Hugh, the young Borg lad. He won't even meet him. He's so traumatized. He won't even be in a room with him until the very end. He has to be kind of convinced. And there's another of the, I can't remember which film it is, where he looks in the mirror and he remembers the Borg tech like bursting out of his face. There hasn't been a lot of that. Like, he's not a Borg fan, but he's kind of, you know.
I mean, the big thing, of course, what, you know, I presume the big sort of emotional pivot in this series is the fact that his father was abusive in some way.
Mm.
And so that's where we see the trauma coming through. And I suppose that's character development for him. But he actually seems to have been curiously absent in a lot of the...
He's having his own adventure.
Yeah.
Doing his own thing. Let's say some good things about that episode, just to balance out, Ian, because I feel like everyone's probably stopped their podcast by now. Say some good things about it.
So you're saying we should say some good things because nobody's listening?
Well, I'm saying we should say some good things in case we catch them in the act just before the press.
Before they switch off.
Pause, unsubscribe.
I mean, I'm not in the business of trying to make people to listen to this podcast if they don't want to listen to this podcast.
I don't want to undermine anyone's, including my own, like, enjoyment of it.
No.
I'm finding it very enjoyable.
It is.
And I don't agree that it's shit.
No, I don't agree that it's shit. I do agree that, as we've said before, like the pacing characterization is sometimes incredibly ropey. I can't decide whether I'm on board with the fact they keep doing these pastiches. So we've had a kind of, you know, X-Files pastiche in the most recent episode.
I loved it.
We've had the Ocean's 11 caper.
Oh, yeah.
I can't work out if I like that kind of patchwork of artistic, creative shorthands.
Do you know what? I guess what I miss in Picard that I really enjoyed, and it's alluded to, a lot of our guests have mentioned this, and I think it's kind of what they're almost getting at. Who spoke about the soft furnishings? That was Gordon and Jenny. Yeah,
Gordon and Jenny.
And I think I remember Ant, when we were looking forward to this, he says the same thing. He wants to see more interiors.
Yep.
And I think we're all missing the day-to-day life. That's just something I really enjoyed. And it goes with the administrative elements and Jenny's wish last HR. Episode for an HR department. I really miss the day-to-day running of a spaceship.
Yep.
Whereas here it's like running from crisis to crisis, which should be exciting, and it is in many ways, but I kind of miss that idea of just like, what's it like to live on a spaceship? But there's plenty of other series I can watch, you know. We have The Next Generation. I don't really need to see more of that.
Yeah, there have definitely been moments in this series that have given that the hair in the back of the neck, the twinkle, the this is what we like science fiction fantasy for, to hold up the mirror and to make us think interesting things about the situation we're in and to think about the human condition and stuff. And some really funny moments, some really good lines. I wonder if the reason it isn't particularly hitting... Mind you, I was going to say the reason it isn't particularly hitting as hard with me is I'm not a Star Trek super fan, but then again, Ian, given his credentials...
Yes, as he started, it should have been tailor-made for him.
It should work. Maybe he's just getting old and jaded and bitter.
You made it to episode 3 of season 2.
Yeah.
I mean, that was quite the commitment. I can't believe you didn't see it through.
It is interesting because I think season 2 is better than season 1.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised.
I'm surprised. Season 1 was more plodding.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you would go into season 2 and that's where you'd give up rather than giving up on season 1.
One of the reasons I would not give up, other than I have posted a podcast about it, is they've announced the cast for season 3, which, and you know, just the other night I was like, I don't know if I've got another season of 5 Picard in me, because it's just, I'm enjoying it, it's fine, I don't really have a lot to say about it. But then I was thinking, oh, next season.
Definitely.
Yeah, like, you should know already. If you've listened this far, we're going to spoil it, but we've got Gates McFadden, Geordi, what's it? I forget all their names. Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of...
They're really throwing the shit at the wall, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of exciting crew.
Did you see a brilliant thread that went up? I saw it on Reddit. I saw it on Twitter today, which was a thread of what all the different doctors on Star Trek would do if you went to the... medical room, what's it called? If you went to the hospital on a ship with a dildo lodged in your arse.
What?
It's just like, what? How they would all react to you.
This is outrageous.
Very well done.
Well, I don't know if I want you to link to that in the show notes or not. NSFW, show note link.
It was very good. Anyway, so there's 2 episodes left. I am concerned at the pace at which they're going to have to
wrap up,
knit like fury to get all these.
This is everything that needs to happen. Jurati is still in there.
Yeah,
they keep saying because she did not kill Raffi when she could have very easily. So they need to get Jurati and the Borg Queen sorted out somehow. They need to get the Doctor and the little kid off the La Serena. They need to get everyone reunited back on the ship. Noonien Soong and Corey need to do something. They need to make sure the Europa mission goes off without a hitch, and they need to get back to their own timeline, which may remind you the whole reason they've gone back in time is because in their own present day, they're being attacked.
Shit's going down.
They're being attacked by the Borg Queen, who we assume might be Jurati. They've got to get all this done in 2x45 minutes.
They do. The only thing I would challenge you on there is I don't think they will get Jurati the Queen resolved in this
season. I think that's
going to be the... not necessarily a new character, but that's the major series cliffhanger.
Yeah, she's left Roman. Maybe she's got her own little new Borg
collective
hive going. Yeah, could be.
A bougie boutique.
And what about the Q? Q's illness.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much going on.
I would have happily seen, I think I speak for all Star Trek fans when I say I would have happily seen this series be basically 7 episodes of Q.
I couldn't give a crap about Corey.
I know you couldn't.
Oh, and what happened?
What about Elnor?
Yeah, Elnor. I forgot about Elnor. He cropped up. I saw his name in the credits the last episode. I was like, oh, God,
Elnor!
Here we go. But he was just in flashback, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to be back. You know it.
Well, there's a little segue there then from Picard into the section of the show where we recommend media for you to listen to. You were saying you wish there was more content about normal lives. And I have
normal life
finally been... Yeah, yes. I took that as read. I've finally been tuning in to something we recommended, I think, in episode one of this season two of this podcast, which was Grayson's Art Club.
Oh, yes.
Which has been running since we've been recording, but I haven't had time for it.
It's the third time we've recommended.
And I'm now into episode four or something. I think it was Moan Rizwan on this episode. Yes, but the one with Joe Wilkinson, love Joe Wilkinson, previous episode, was on normal life. And one of the things it reminds me of is I've started really consciously taking pictures of just like random stuff in the world around me. So I find when I look back at photographs, it's those like, oh, there's that.
Do you know
that cardigan or whatever? Yeah,
things I really miss. When I look at pictures of my daughter when she was a baby, there's no pictures of me. Well, there are very few pictures of me pushing the pram, which is such a strange thing because I pushed it many times a day for years. Yes. But there's no one ever took a picture of me doing that. Yeah. And it's so strange that that's such a big part of my life and I don't have a picture of it. So,
Grayson's Art Club, phenomenal. So, so good. It's just an absolute balm for the soul. If you haven't watched it, I really recommend you to do it. It's on whatever the hell Channel 4 is calling their on-demand service this week. And if you're in the US, it's something worth naughty tallying, I would say.
Naughty tallying.
Any recommendations from you, Jenny?
I'm going to double down. So these are both things we've recommended before. On my recommendation of Moon Knight. Last time I spoke about Moon Knight, I'd watched one episode. Sorry, Moon Knight. I'd only watched one episode on Disney Plus, and it's so if you haven't seen this or if you didn't hear that episode, it's another Marvel Cinematic Universe spin-off on Disney Plus. It stars Oscar Isaac. Was not a character I was familiar with, but Moon Knight is another comic book character. You don't need to know any other Marvel properties or storylines. It's all been very self-contained. And I said, when I watched this one episode, I said I'd really like lost momentum with a lot of the Marvel spin-offs because I'm a massive Marvel fan and I love all the movies. And I really enjoyed WandaVision and The Falcon, The Winter Soldier. But then by the time we got to What If and Hawkeye, I was kind of burnt out and I just thought, oh, I don't care anymore what's going on. But I gave this one a whirl and I've very much enjoyed it. Very cinematic, very exciting. Oscar Isaac, Ethan Hawke, and I'm sorry I've forgotten the lady's name in it, but she's very good as well. And the storyline is it's a man, a gift shop worker in the British Museum. They had the premiere in the British Museum, which I thought was so strange. Wow. But it's because it's set in the British Museum. He has a personality disorder. He shares his body with another personality, is that of a mercenary, Moon Knight, who is kind of an avenging angel type character. But it's the dealing with of mental illness is superb for all it is absolutely ridiculous and fantastical. Oscar Isaac and the scriptwriters do a fantastic job with not knowing what's real. You really, as a viewer, usually when you see someone with any kind of mental illness, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
Normal life slash what they understand to be real.
And there's usually
they look ridiculous or they look, it's very obvious how deluded they are. But you're brought along as a viewer and you're very much, you become not really sure what's real either. And that's really interesting. I haven't seen that done very effectively, even if you think about your more serious, serious, mental health addressing bits of media, things like, I'm thinking of things like Girl Interrupted and what's the one with Russell Crowe where he's a mathematical genius. Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind.
There's a couple of twists and turns, but essentially it's kind of like, oh, you're mad.
Yes.
But this is really like, there's one episode left to go, but it's, you really, as a viewer at this point, I'm like, I don't know anymore. And he's extremely confused. And he swings on a pendulum between, no, this is real and this is nonsense, or this is nonsense and this is real, and I don't know who is out to get me and who isn't. And as a viewer, I don't know either. It's very, very well done. And that sense of increasing panic and increasing paranoia is dealt with brilliantly for a show that also has recently featured like a CGI talking hippo god. You know, it's really, really good. And I think if you are not into science fiction fantasy, if you can give it a go, it's a good one. It's a good one to give it a whirl. And if you always think, why does everyone have such stupid names? And why are the plots so fantastical? And why are we all worried about a thing that doesn't exist, like a Tesseract or whatever? I would say this is a good one to give it a whirl with, because it allows the weirdness of being a human to sort of burst out all over the screen and just become very messy and very tangled. And yeah,
that's such a good recommendation. It's a really good recommendation for what sounds like a really good show. So much so that, for the first time, I'm going to take one of our recommendations and go and watch it. Because, like genuinely, it's a thing that I've been kind of like circling the drain on throughout this series of recording this podcast. But it's so, so true. And it's trite. It's obviously the point of triteness. But like sci-fi should, good fantasy, the whole point of it is to, it shouldn't be fantastical. And that's always the criticism that's leveled at, like, Ursula K. Le Guin is super pissy about this with good reason, as is Terry Pratchett, as are any of the sort of like heavyweight sci-fi and fantasy authors. Like, it's not just, like, you've got to have the rules of the world and then you piss about with them. If you don't have those rules, if it is just like, you know, and then he clicked his fingers and it all went better, all got better, it doesn't work. But you've got to, the reality of it has to be, and I think sometimes when science fiction and fantasy is unsuccessful is when we drift from that and we start making it about the Tesseract or whatever.
Exactly.
It's never about the Tesseract.
No, it's always about the people. And I must say as well, if you do try Moon Knight on my recommendation, I nearly gave up in the first episode because Oscar Isaac, in one of his personalities, has it's not extremely dodgy, but it's a wee bit Dick Van Dyke-ish London accent. And you're like, why was this character choice? But everything is explained. Don't worry, it's all part of the plot, this slightly weird accent.
What was the, forgive me, I can't remember, you loved, and I can't even remember the actor's name, but the actor who plays Bree in Arrested Development, she did the...
Maria Bamford.
Maria Bamford, thank you. Because we've talked about that on the show before as a really good example of how you can portray mental health breakdowns in a really relatable way.
In a relatable way, and not always... I mean,
not always a sympathetic way.
Yeah, and also, mental health is not always a tragedy for the person involved. Obviously, it can be very tragic, and illness in any kind is awful. I just shouldn't need to give that disclaimer, but the kind of like highs and lows of it is quite interesting. And like, if you're ever in the throes of it, or if you know anyone who's ever in the throes of it, some of it can be extremely enjoyable. It can be extremely enjoyable to feel like I'm incredibly special, or this situation isn't as it seems. It's actually much more exciting, or there's something weird going on.
We're just surfing the wave.
Yeah, surfing that wave of mood and feeling like you're outside your body, or you're inhabiting, like someone else is inhabiting your body with you. That dawning realization that actually maybe you're wrong about everything. Like, it's a very exciting place to be. And I think, oh God, I can't remember the name of Maria Bamford's show.
Neither can I, but we'll put it in the show notes.
It's so good. That's a really good one. And it's extremely funny and weird. Moon Knight. I give it a whirl. It really grew on me, and I am extremely I must say, similar to Picard. It's had a lot of kind of weird plot elements, but it's kind of racing towards an exciting conclusion, whereas Picard seems to be on some sort of crazy roller coaster. It's on a waltzer.
There's no obvious conclusion.
Anything could happen. I feel like we've really done Picard a disservice. We do like Picard, and I like you. I love Jean-Luc himself.
I've got two more things to recommend.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's do it.
One is analogous to what we're just talking about, and it's Terry Pratchett. I'm not just going to recommend Terry Pratchett, don't worry. But
recommend him.
I do recommend him thoroughly. You may know that there are new audiobooks of some of his works, in fact, of all of his works, being recorded as we speak. Some of them are released.
Ooh.
And we have people like Peter Serafinovich doing the voice of Death. We've got Bill Nye doing the voice of the Footnotes.
Wow.
So a bunch of them have been released already. I haven't bought any of them yet, but it's worth... Terry Pratchett is one of those authors who still carries the stench of fantasy, that sort of sense that it's super uncool and kind of silly. But
everything's very ironic.
Yeah.
That feeling that it's not, you shouldn't take it seriously, but I absolutely do.
Oh, I completely do. And I was having a conversation with a colleague who works at Big Issue, Laura Kelly Dunlop. And I was talking to some of the young recruits that she's working with at the Big Issue. And I was making a point about something, I can't remember what it was, but I said, oh, I go to sleep every night listening to Terry Pratchett. And Laura said, oh, so do I.
Yeah, it's very relaxing.
And there's loads of people I know who will either constantly read the books or use them in the same way that we do, which is, I certainly do, you sometimes do, which is that I know these stories absolutely inside out. I can drop into them at any point. I adore the stories. I adore the characters. I learn new things and think about new things in different ways in different places. And I haven't bought any of the new ones, not because I'm at all scared. It's been produced by the estate. They're going to be fabulous. I have absolutely no doubt. I just haven't bought any of them yet. And there's a little bit of me is excited about them coming out because it's almost like listening to a cover album. Mm-hmm. It's songs that you love just played in a different way. And I know that our friend Richard Cobbett, for example, hasn't read Snuff, the last book in the Discworld series, because he always wants there to be one more Terry Pratchett. Mm. Terry Pratchett, of course, passed some years ago. He always wants to be one more Terry Pratchett that he hasn't read. And actually, the new dramatization, not dramatization, new readings with these amazing voices are coming out. And most of the ones that are out already are part of the Witches series, which is, I think, my favourite series. I'm so excited to listen to them. But I'm almost too scared to, because it will be too special.
Yeah. But it's like you want to pay them your full attention.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't drift off to sleep with them. That's really exciting. You know, I like to listen to, it's science fiction administration. I really like Going Postal.
Yeah.
And the one with the bank, what's that?
Making Money.
And I like Mort.
Yes.
There are three I like to listen to. I don't like The Witches for some reason.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I think, because I often listen to it when I'm falling asleep as well, and I can't follow it.
Fair. The last thing I was going to recommend was another podcast, which is one that drenches the podcast that I listen to in advertising. And so I eventually gave into it. And it is Lou Saunders' Cuddle Club.
Oh, yeah.
Which is utterly fantastic if you can click into Lou Saunders' humour.
I do find her quite inaccessible.
Yeah, I think that's a good word. And it's not a bitchy word.
Like, I don't get it.
It's a particular kind of humour. And I think having seen her in a bunch of different stuff, I'm finally there. And Cuddle Club is just a show. She interviews another comedian or other celeb, usually comedians, asks them like mad questions, kind of ostensibly centred around cuddling. But because she's got a particular style, often she'll just spring utterly inappropriate questions on them. Most of the people I've listened to, like Alex Horns, is phenomenal, as you expect. But I'm listening to one with Josh Widdicombe just now, it's the most recent episode, and I don't think he's quite there. But for the people who are like pals with her, who like get the humour, who get what the gig is, it's just joyous. I'm kind of tend to be alternating between, fortunately, Desert Island Discs, Off Menu, and Cuddle Club. It's a new one in my rotation, and it is a fun place to be. They're really short, really fun. They are particularly good when they are recorded in person, but there are a bunch of COVID specials on there, recorded over Zoom or whatever, and they're all right. Do the job. So yeah, if you want something a bit fun, a bit silly, go for it.
So is next week the last Picard?
No, there's two more.
There's two more. Oh, thank God. Okay, so
We're recording this after.
Yeah. So actually, there's only one.
As far as the chronology in the world is concerned, chronology.
Well, what I'm concerned about is that I'm not going to get to talk about this, but it's good because it's running late. One last thing, I can't recommend it yet because I haven't seen it, but I'm very, very excited, is that ahead of the surprise UK release date, which I think is 13th of May, I'm very shortly going to see a preview of Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I'm extremely excited. It does
look phenomenal.
If you can pre-book it, I think you probably should. It looks brilliant. It's getting fantastic reviews. It's incredibly weird, apparently. The trailer is mind-bending. I'm going to see a preview of that next Monday, so I cannot wait to report back.
I've seen some people saying they really want to go. It's funny, actually. I've seen, I think, three people on Twitter saying variations to the effect that they want to go and see it in a cinema. Not particularly because it's a sort of film that necessarily is, you know, I want to have that big screen experience, but because they specifically want to make sure that Yo doesn't flop.
Oh, really?
You want to make sure, because it's such an important... I mean, you've seen her be interviewed.
Yeah.
It's obviously incredibly important to her and obviously to anybody in a minority role. And they've said, like, okay, this is going to be the film that I finally go back into the cinema for.
Oh, really?
To
great.
To make sure that, you know, the box office sheets, the opening weekend.
Yeah.
It's a good look for what is in some ways, of course... It's a funny sort of hybrid, isn't it, between... quite blockbustery, but of course not in any distance franchise, but also quite art house in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great to hear. I'm so glad. I would love it to do well in the UK. We will be pushing it like crazy. And if you've been staying away from theatres because of COVID, that is completely understandable. But I will say, as someone who works in cinema marketing, so maybe I'm not that impartial, if you are going to bars and cafes and everything else, then maybe chance your local independent cinema, if you fancy it, during a nice quiet screening, because we are working really hard and we have all the same thing. I know it feels like you're sitting in a black box with no ventilation, but we have got ventilation, fresh air ventilation cranked up.
Nobody's talking.
Fresh air, no one's talking. We at my cinema, we have a choice of distance screenings or standard. So if you want a screening where you know you're going to be, you know, a couple of meters away from other people, that'd be fantastic. We're fogging our cinema a couple of times a week. We're working really, really hard. It is like super cleaned down.
I am surprised actually that people are so reticent about cinemas in particular. Only
more than other things. More than other things. I understand that people don't want to mix generally, but don't single out cinemas.
Particularly because I was in London this week, and every time I go to London, of course, the public health messaging in England in particular has been very different from in Scotland until recently. And every time I've visited, I've felt discomforted by the experience. And this time was the first time. In fact, I saw Ollie Mann, a very prolific podcaster, comment the other day. He'd been in the West End. It was the first time he'd seen the West End, feeling at the West End since before the pandemic. And certainly the last time when I was there on Wednesday this week, London just felt like London. It didn't feel any different at all. There was maybe a couple of masks here and there, but generally no masking.
Really?
Just no distancing at all, nothing. So it felt very much like business as usual.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like,
But I just find it funny, like particularly I've seen a few of my American friends being like, I won't be going back to sit in a windowless box while people rustle popcorn and shout at the screen and get in my way and are generally disruptive. I was like, what kind of a cinema are you going to? That doesn't happen at my cinema. We are very well behaved. You're just going to the wrong cinema. We all sit very nicely in our assigned seats. There's no talking and most of us are masked. Yeah. Fresh air blasting in, maybe bring a coat. It's not super warm, I will admit that. But anyway, we've got off topic and we've gone a bit preachy. I cannot wait for that film.
Yeah, it's going to be fabulous. And there's a really appetite from people to see something like that succeed, to show that the industry doesn't just need to depend on tentpole releases from...
on hench dudes punching each other.
MGM and stuff. That's it for this very late episode of How Picard. We'll be back next week, for episode 9, which you've already seen.
Time is a construct.
And then we'll be back for episode 10. There are rumbling discussions of special episodes to come after this, but
mostly from guests who couldn't make it to the main series.
We're promising nothing at this stage.
No, I promise nothing. I mean, really, do you want more of this?
Because Jesus, we haven't managed to maintain any kind of regularity.
Maybe if our child went to sleep at a normal time.
Yeah.
I still love you, Jean-Luc.
I still love you, Ada.
I like you, Ada.
See you next week, folks.